Welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast with me, Kathy Love. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. Join me for cutting-edge interviews with leaders in the allied health and business fields, along with plenty of practical content that you can use to make your business practice perfect. Hello. For our listening pleasure, we have Maddie Buckner. Oh, let me just introduce you again. Madeline Buckner, who is better known as Maddie Buckner, the founding director of Little Dreamers. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, it's been a while in the making. Our paths crossed again the start of last, what year is it? The start of last year at the Source Kids Expo, I think.
It did, but our paths crossed many, many, many years ago, well before that.
Yeah. Yeah, when you were just very little and I was still old. So.
Never.
Tell us. Never. Yeah, no, that's true. Tell us about Little Dreamers first and foremost, and then I think your story is just so remarkable that we'll get to that bit as well.
So Little Dreamers is Australia's leading nonprofit that supports young people providing unpaid care in their family. So this might be providing care for a parent, a brother, a sister, sometimes even a grandparent who might have a chronic illness, mental illness, disability, drug or alcohol addiction, or a combination of all of those things. And we aim to provide programs that improve their quality of life. So we look at their education, their employment, we look at their social connection, mental health, and all of those things to kind of ensure that our kids growing up providing care are also growing up as well-rounded children with access to the same childhood that every child deserves.
Yeah. Now, I know the story of how this came about, but you get to tell it just one more time to everybody listening. How did this just kind of land into your beautiful creative brain?
I grew up as a young carer myself. So I have grown up with an incredibly close and very special family. So my younger brother has a range of chronic health conditions and learning difficulties. He has asthma, epilepsy, encephalitis, fibromyalgia, and an adrenal insufficiency. And he's also allergic to dairy, egg, soy, lavender, wool, walnuts, but no anaphylaxis, which is like the best thing ever. And growing up from a very young age, he was always in and out of hospital. And I can remember being as young as 6 years old and pouring out his medicine and packing the hospital bags and checking on him very late at night to check his breathing and his temperature and waking my parents up at the slightest sign of something being wrong. And for me, that felt like it was quite normal. I didn't realize as a child that there were kids who didn't grow up doing those things. I just thought that that was kind of what everyone did until I realized that it wasn't. And I was a bit of an odd child that knew how to do all of those things. And so from a very young age, I realized that there was kind of a gap in the healthcare system that needed to be fixed. And at the age of 9 years old, together with a friend, we started running fundraising events for other community organizations to raise money for sibling support programs. And then when I was 14, 15 years old, my beautiful mum was diagnosed with breast cancer. And kind of the whole world shifted for me. I was going through those angsty teenage years that everyone goes through. And at the same time, my mum, who had been the rock of the family and always very involved in the care of my brother, was suddenly going through chemotherapy, radiotherapy, major, major surgeries. And it was just me and my dad who had to kind of knuckle down and take care of the family together. And so that's what we did. But it was around that time where I started Googling a bit about breast cancer. Doctors weren't telling me what was going on because they're like, she's a child, she doesn't need to worry about it. Why would we need to burden her with all this information? But it was my mum. I was watching her go through all of this. I wanted to know what was going on. And I stumbled across a research report written by a man named Saul Becker in the UK, who has been writing research reports on young carer since before I was born. And he started, or he wrote down, you know, a young carer experiences guilt or social isolation or whatever it might be. And I was like, yep, that's me, that's me, that's me. And I kind of just, you know, figured out that, okay, well, this, I might fit into this group of young people. Why has no one spoken to me about this before? And turned to my friend and we decided to create our own charity and get to create the change that we wanted to see in the world rather than raising money and getting someone else to create the change.
Mm. Mm. So what did Little Dreamers look like way back then?
We were a voluntary run organization that created dream experiences for young carers. So a lot like Starlight or Make-A-Wish. My brother had had a Starlight wish. I really wanted one, so we...
Fair enough.
Exactly. So we created Starlight version, Little Dreamers version, wishes for young carers. We called them dream experiences, and that's what we did day in, day out. And we did some really special ones, hot air balloon rides, overnight stays at hotels, limousine rides, meeting your favorite celebrity. We had a young girl who wanted to be a zookeeper for the day, so she got an outfit, she got to go and interact with animals at the Melbourne Zoo. It was for someone who loved planning events like me, it was like a dream come true that I got to do that for all of the young carers around Australia.
Yeah. So it kind of snowballed for a while there. It was kind of growing and growing and growing, and you were getting public support and public sort of notoriety and invitations and awards and all sorts of things. What was it like when Little Dreamers was literally going through its growing pains of that fast, rapid growth? Because I remember watching it.
I think we're still going through it. I mean, it's crazy. So it was around 2017 that kind of we'd been going for eight and a bit years, and it felt like we were kind of trucking along through the mud a little bit. Like we were trying really hard and we were pushing really hard, and we kept kind of, it felt like we kept going backwards. And then 2017 hit, and we started receiving some recognition from some really cool people. Namely Queen Elizabeth and Prince Harry were kind of the kind of pinnacle, actually. and it was kind of that spurred off. We got our first amount of government funding that year. I was able to start working full time in the organization. We received an incredible donation from a very generous individual who was able to fund a salary position for me. So I was able to quit my job and jump into this full time. And from there, it kind of, it spiraled. I became a full-time employee at Little Dreamers in August 2017. We hired our second staff member in May 2018. And now in September 2020, we have 40 staff across Victoria, Queensland, and New South Wales.
Yeah, growing pains. I'm feeling them. That is incredible.
It hasn't been easy, and it's definitely been something that's been a massive challenge for me. You come from being a solo founder where you get to do everything yourself and you get to be in control. Yeah. Someone who's a control freak like me, you get to be in control of everything, to going to handing off parts of your baby to other people and trusting that they can do it and that they can often do it better than you can because you're doing everything. And I mean, it's better to hire people that are better at the job than you are, right?
Yep. Absolutely. So all of that is a really amazing crew. Who are the people in your business and what are the jobs?
So we have a range of casual facilitators that go out and run some of our school-based programs. And also we have a tender with the federal government as part of their National Carer Gateway program. So we have casual peer support facilitators that run that component of the program for us. And then we also have a marketing team. We have an incredible programs team filled with family support workers with every different background, from traditional social work right through to a lawyer who didn't like the law path that came and is now our national head of programs. We have an incredible impact measurement person who is studying psychology. We have people and culture. We have a volunteer manager. We have an admin assistant. It's crazy to think that all of these people have chosen to work. It's like, I feel like people should go out and get an adult job. And I feel like when they come and work for me, it's like not an adult job, but really for them, it is an adult job.
And what's your role now?
I'm the CEO. I have a fancy title.
Corner office or not. We're in Melbourne, so you're in the corner home office.
The corner home office. I do actually, funnily enough, we moved into a brand new office space in June last year because we'd outgrown the space we were in before, and I got my very first private door office. It was like
with the door that you can close, where you can hide if you wish.
Exactly. It took me a really long time to feel like I actually deserved that space. And it was actually my one of our team members, who's now our Victorian state manager, who was like, no, you really need this space. But it was a big step for me that now I have my own private. I mean, we're all working from home this year, but in theory, I have my own private office.
Maybe the team want you to be in the office.
Maybe.
So talk us through about the kids, the young carers, well, not even just kids, the young carers that you support. How do you find them? How do they find you?
Our young carers come from all different walks of life. So we work with young carers in every state and territory across Australia, primarily Victoria, New South Wales and Queensland, because that's where our team is based. But we do have young carers everywhere. We have, I guess, our young carers, they care for a range of different people. So they care for a parent, they care for a sibling, they care for a grandparent. We have majority of our kids actually care for a sibling with autism, is kind of majority of what we get. Next up for us is mental health. So I guess the secondary cause of why people come to us is if they're caring for someone in their family with a mental illness. And then there's physical and intellectual disability, there's chronic illness, there's cancer. I'm really sorry if you can hear my dog in the background. She's just excited.
Daisy is hungry.
She's turned her bed upside down and she's just kind of trying to bury herself in her bed. It's the joys of working from home, right? Yeah.
Keeping it real. I'm good with that.
So we have autism, mental health, physical and intellectual disability, chronic illness, cancer. And interestingly, a quarter of the young carers that come through our programs care for more than one person in their family.
Wow, that is amazing.
Yeah.
Whew.
And our young carers, exactly, our young carers range from as young as 4 years old right up to 25, but majority of the kids that we work with are between the ages of 10 and 14 years old. So they're young. They're taking on significant caring roles that really only an adult should take on, I think. But our opinion at Little Dreamers is that we're never going to stop young people from taking on those caring roles. I don't think that's a plan that we should have, but we can increase the support that they have around them so that when they do take on these caring roles in their families, it's not the end of the world and they don't have the significant risk factors that we know that young carers have now, because they have this extra layer of support. Because everyone, if they've got someone in their family who is unwell or has a disability, you're obviously going to take on that caring role. For most of our kids, it's not a choice that they make, it's just something that you
what
do
happens.
Exactly. Yeah. So we may as well increase the support around them rather than trying to stop them from being carers in the first place.
Yeah. So how do the young carers find you?
So they kind of come from lots of different areas. So 50% of our carers would come from community organisations. So things like Autism Australia, things like Make-A-Wish. Other young carers come to us from OTs. They come to us from psychologists, from social workers, from their school wellbeing team or teachers. Some of it's through word of mouth, through social media, through media mentions that we have. We actually have a TV ad on at the moment, so we've got quite a few referrals from that. But they kind of come from everywhere, and we get a mixture of kids referring themselves versus adults referring someone that they know or a child in their life. So it's a real mixture, and that depends on the age of the young person applying as mm-hmm. well. But it never surprises me anymore where kids come from or where young people come from. And also the number of people that contact us and say, I didn't know I was a young carer, or I didn't know my child was a young carer until we came across you. And that used to surprise me, and it doesn't surprise me anymore.
You've identified it with you for the vast majority of your life, though.
Well, to an extent, I definitely identified as a special sibling, I guess. I identified that my relationship with my brother and my brother's health conditions weren't normal. And I think that my incredible mum has always been very, I guess, proactive in finding support for me. I don't think I ever identified with the term young carer until I was a lot older. And I think that that's also a challenge that we face, is that majority of kids that we work with don't necessarily identify with the term young carer. So we tend to use, we support young people with caring roles in their family rather than a young carer themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. And it also normalizes it as such, and it just paints the context of which they're assuming these roles and responsibilities.
Exactly.
Yeah. So from that sort of first phone call and that first introduction, what is the experience that the young carers have when they approach you?
So a young carer will be paired with one of our incredible family support workers, who all have their own caseload of families that they work with. And that family support worker will get to know the young carer. They'll figure out, okay, well, what areas of support or what areas are you struggling with at the moment? They will then, I guess, either pair them or put them into one of our programs or refer them out into other partner services as well. So we run 8 different direct support programs ourselves. One of them, for example, is not counseling. We're not a counseling-based organization. We don't offer counseling, but we have partnerships with incredible organizations that do. Yeah. So when we're getting to know the young carer, we might suggest that they come to our holiday program. We might suggest, if they're old enough, to come into our Big Dreamers Personal Development and Leadership program. They might get paired with a mentor. Or we might help them access Centrelink or other bursary financial support. But if they do need more, I guess, more targeted mental health support, we refer them on to incredible professionals who can do that. We don't think we can do it all. We can do a lot, but not at all.
Yep. And people need a good, skilled, safe set of hands for that that work.
Exactly. And I think it's more important. We can do so much if we work together. And I think that's something that we know when it comes to any allied health professional, is that you work with multiple different industries and different people to get the best care. And that's what we try and give to our young carers.
Yeah. Tell us a bit more about the programs. You've hinted at a couple there, but there's a few more.
There are. So we have our Dream Experience program that still runs. It's been running for 11 years now. And then we have our school holiday programs, which run across Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, Townsville, and the Gold Coast now. We have our Big Dreamers Personal Development program, which is a 6-month long leadership program for young carers aged 13 to 18 years old, to help them figure out who they are outside of their caring role and what they want to do when they grow up. We have a one-on-one and a group-based mentoring program. We have an in-person peer support 8-week program, which is currently run in New South Wales and Queensland. We have a schools-based program called the Young Carer Project, which aims to work with teachers on how to better identify young carers in their classroom and how, as a school, they can provide support for young carers in their community. And then we also have the Dreamers Hub, which is an online peer support platform for young carers kind of age 13 and up.
Yeah. And what have you noticed with 2020? How has it changed how young carers find you, engage you, how you deliver services. What's been the pandemic impact for you guys?
We've had an incredible increase in the number of applications and requests for support. It's gone up by 155% this time last year, which is just insane. I was kind of trying to work out why we were so busy the other day, and then I realized maybe that's why.
COVID. That little piece.
Well, it feels like we're busier than ever before, but we're not allowed to leave our houses.
Interesting.
But what we've seen with our young carers is that a lot of the time they use going to school or seeing their friends as a form of respite, and they haven't been at school since March. They haven't necessarily been able to see their friends. It's been really hard. A lot of our families haven't had as many support workers come into their homes because it's at higher risk, or they're just not doing it at the moment. So our young carers are taking on much more significant caring roles in their family. We have a couple of families whose kids haven't done any schooling since March because the parents might have a learning disability or an intellectual disability, or just might have too much on and can't help their kids to learn from home. They might not have reliable access to the internet or to devices where they can access their schooling. So there's lots of things that we've found. And over the past kind of 6 months, we've taken majority of our programs online. So we're now delivering our mentoring, our Big Dreamers program. We're delivering now online tutoring, which we were never doing before. We've got 1 hour respite fun game sessions every week called the Hour of Power. Our Dreamers Hub has been more important than ever before. And what we've seen is that while when we can return to face-to-face programs, we will, we're now always going to keep some of our programs also running online because we've been able to access young carers who live in rural and remote communities who've never been able to access our programs before. And we don't want them then to lose that once we go back to face-to-face. So now we will always have kind of a hybrid model of online and in-person delivery once we're allowed to go back to in-person, which I think is really special.
I was anticipating that you would say that because your impact is amplified when you can kind of just, you know, climb through the little white light there. And that's only going to be for the greater good.
Yeah, definitely. And there are so many barriers that are broken down when you can access something from your own home in the safety of your own environment as well.
Yeah. And also somewhat on demand as well. There might be a time and place where, you know, you've sort of got just reoccurring online availability and checking in and checking out and all of that nice stuff as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So at what point did you realise that this was really going to be a global phenomenon?
I guess there's kind of been a couple of times where it's hit me as to how impactful our programs are or how big this organisation has been or has become. And in fact, one of them was just earlier this week. I was sitting at my computer and we had a team meeting. And we had 16 people on our team meeting this week. And I kind of looked at all their faces on Zoom and all the little boxes. And I was like, this is kind of cool. Like there are all these people where they get up and they go to work every day and they solely work on improving the quality of life for young carers around Australia. And how cool is it that we have built this organization that can do that? And I'm on research and ethics committee. I don't know why, because I'm not a researcher, but I'm on an ethics committee for a piece of research happening in Europe at the moment. And I was sitting on a meeting with them a couple of weeks ago, and they were talking about all the kind of progress that they've made in the research paper and how they've quoted Little Dreamers as a best practice organization around the world. And I was like, wow, like go back.
How did that happen?
go back. 16-year-old Maddie that like this is where she's going to end up when she's 27 and she would not believe you.
What can you tell us about learning to lead a team that delivers this awesome?
I think it's all about being, I guess when I started I had this idea of what a leader was meant to look like, and you're meant to be strong and you're meant to be sure of yourself and you're meant to be confident and you're meant to believe in yourself and believe in what you're doing. And I'm not all of those things. I think over the past kind of 6 months especially, but over the past couple of years that we've been employing staff, I've learned that you just have to be yourself and you have to be vulnerable. And if your team sees you cry or sees you stress, like my team has seen me do a million times before, they're just going to kind of be able to be there to support you even more. Mm. And it's not a bad thing to show emotion. It's not a bad thing to show that you're struggling or that you're not 100% sure what you're doing or that you don't believe in yourself a million times over every single day, because there's no point operating like a robot. Like, you're running a charity organization and you are only leading with other humans. So you may as well be yourself and kind of lead from the heart is what I try and do.
Yeah. Yeah. And the whole fake it till you make it thing, I don't think is very helpful. I think it's leadership is messy and it's confronting and it's glorious and it's surprising and you can grow with it and you can grow around it. And it's kind of a day by day adventure. I kind of think.
I completely agree. I mean, imposter syndrome is real and I have it every day, but there's no point faking that you've got it all together. Like, I was sitting in a team meeting a couple of weeks ago and I was eating food and I like spilt it all the way down my top and I was like, I mean, this is what I'm going to be wearing for the rest of the day now. Who really cares?
Yep. Grab a scarf.
I was like, this is my life. This is where we're at in 2020.
Yeah. Yeah. The casualization of the work Zoom meeting.
Yeah, exactly.
Good. It's good. It's good. What do young carers tell you about as they're working with you and the experiences they have with you? What do you get from their story?
I learn so much from our young carers every single day. I wish that I had programs like this when I was younger, because I sit around a room with some of our young carers. I go in our Big Dreamers program, which I'm not allowed to have favorite programs, but if I did, it would be the Big Dreamers program.
Yeah. But not that you have one. Yeah,
I don't have one. But we do these retreats or these camps, two camps per program, and I go to all of the camps. And the last one that we went to back in January, we sat around in a circle and all of our young carers on that program spoke about their caring role. And they did it on their own. We didn't want to ask them to talk about their caring role if they didn't want to, but they chose to. And they sat around in this circle and they spoke about what life was like for them in words that I could only have dreamt I knew how to say when I was their age. And one of the young carers in that circle said, I now feel like I've got 16 best friends. Like, I've got 16 best friends in this room that understand what I'm going through. And I left that circle at the end and I went and I called my mum and I burst into tears, because I was like, look at this thing that we've created. Look at this environment that we've given where young carers get to have this social connection that they've never had before, and they get to feel comfortable doing what they love to do and things like that. And they tell us that, you know, it's changed their life and that they've had opportunities that they've never had before and they feel more comfortable. And it's just, it makes me feel all warm and fuzzy inside.
And look, this is just the year for it, isn't it? I mean, you know, to be able to reach more and create more positivity and support more, you know, little lives as such. And it's interesting that you've kind of gone online and being able to kind of just dial it up completely. I wonder what would have happened without the pandemic. You know, you'd have just been kind of kicking along and still getting there.
2020 was always meant to be a big year for us, because we launched into Queensland back in March, which was, you know, great timing. And we launched into, we started with a team on the ground in New South Wales, and it was always meant to be a really big year for us. It just wasn't in the way that we expected it to be.
You and just 7 billion others. So what can you tell us about the next 10 years?
Our vision is to have a world in 2030 where every single young carer around the world is supported by someone or something. Mm. So I don't know, we've got 10 years to get there. And to us, that looks like partnerships with other organisations around the world, starting young carer support groups in countries where there isn't any, but really kind of trying to empower organizations on the ground where there is already support on how they can better support young carers. It's improving the research base. It's improving the policy support for young carers. We really want to have a Care Act in Australia. We don't have a National Care Act. So really focusing on what that might look like for support in Australia. Lots of different things, but really just, I guess, growing and embedding support for young carers around the country is something that we really need to do. And we've still got so far to go in that space.
What else is in the 10-year plan?
Oh, so for me personally or for little...
Oh, you can take it wherever you like.
I just want everyone in... When someone mentions the word young carer or when someone mentions a diagnosis or someone in a family, they find something or someone has an accident and someone is diagnosed with something, I want them to look automatically at the other children that are in that family. If there is a diagnosis for someone with a disability or with autism and they have a sibling, I want that to be front of mind when people make that diagnosis and say, okay, this person has a sibling, how can we get them support? Or just like you hand people flyers when they're diagnosed with encephalitis or epilepsy when my brother was, I want them to say, great, you have another daughter, here's something for her. Like, I want it to become automatic. I don't want it to be a question.
Yeah, best practice.
Exactly.
Whole family approach.
Exactly.
You've got the opportunity to get into the ears of thousands and thousands of allied health professionals and business owners. What would you like them to know?
Young carers are really special. Young carers take on an incredibly important role in the lives of families where there is illness and disability and addiction, and they often don't stand up and ask for support themselves. I know many of our young carers will advocate for the person that they care for a million times over and push for extra NDIS funding and extra funding and this, but they very rarely will advocate for themselves. And so I think if we can acknowledge them and recognize the support and really put a focus on them and ask them if they're okay, as much as we ask the person who might have the illness or disability if they're okay as well, then that can change the course of someone's life.
Now, we have absolutely got to make sure that you are back in people's ears in next year and sort of some ongoing updates. You up for another conversation sometime?
100%. Name your time and I'm there.
Well, let's leave it to 2021 and get some good stuff done. So near this conversation, there's going to be a bit of a summary and a link to the website. And, you know, it could be that people hear this and kind of want to connect with you by way of partnerships or introductions. Are you kind of thumbs up on that?
Yes, 100%. All of the thumbs up.
Is there anyone in particular that you would really like an introduction to or a partnership with that people listening may just have a little friend of a friend of a friend kind of moment when they hear? Prince Harry's taken. Just let me manage your expectations.
Well, personally, I mean, I one day really hope to have an introduction to Olivia Newton-John, but that's... Okay. That's from a little dreamer's perspective and a Maddie perspective.
Okay.
As 27-year-old Maddie, who is probably the biggest fan of Grease you will ever meet in your entire life. That's
me. That is a separate conversation, Maddie. That is a separate conversation. All right, Olivia Newton-John. Who else?
But also because of the incredible work she's done in the health space. Who else? Oh God, there are so many people that we want to have introductions to. I think that anyone who comes into contact with a lot of young carers is the people that we want to have introductions to. So anyone who has a big network or base of, I guess, families that they work with, those are the people who can create the change that needs to happen in our organization's life and in the lives of our young carers. So if you do have a big base of families or even a small base, but if you have a base of families and connections that you have and you know that you work with families with young carers, we want to hear from you and we want to partner with you and we want to create change with you. And there's no limit. We work everywhere. So no matter where you are, hit us up.
Beautiful. Let's leave it there. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Anytime.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. For show notes and other resources, please visit practicemadeperfectpodcast.com. While you are there, you can subscribe for future episodes and continue your business adventure with me. And please be sure to share this and other episodes with your friends and colleagues. The Private Practice Made Perfect podcast is brought to you by Experts on Air Podcast Network.